I Got Trouble in Mind. Written by Black Cat. Read by Opal Song. Fandom, Star Wars. Rating, explicit. Relationship, Jango Fett, Jon Antilles. Boba Fett and Jango Fett. Boba Fett and Jon Antilles. Boba Fett and Han Solo. Han Solo and Jon Antilles. Also tagged for humor, alternate universe canon divergence, matchmaking, meddling kids, getting together, light Boba Fett Han Solo of the puppy crush variety, Sith chrysalids, action adventure, families of choice, force sensitive Han Solo, light angst, enemies to lovers, competence kink, anal sex, biting, marking, overstimulation, porn with plot, and oral sex.
Once upon a time, a few mistakes ago, I was in your sights. You got me alone. You found me. You found me. You found me. I guess you didn't care, and I guess I liked that. And when I fell hard, you took a step back. Without me. Without me. Without me. And he's long gone when he's next to me. And I realize the blame is on me. Cause I knew you were trouble when you walked in. Places I've never been till you put me down. Oh, I knew you were trouble when you walked in. So shame on me now.
Chapter 1. Dad? Boba asks, in that faux casual distracted tone that makes a chill slide down Jango's spine. Can Jedi teleport? What? Jango says, absolutely bewildered as to where this is coming from. Boba glances up from his datapad, giving Jango a judgmental look. Jedi, he repeats, can they teleport? Acceptable questions regarding Jedi on the Slave One are generally relegated to how do I kill them and how do I avoid them? And Jango eyes his son a little warily, setting his blaster down. If they could teleport, we'd have a hell of a lot more problems, he says warily. Why, you listening to Spacer Tales again? Boba looks down, but not quickly enough to hide the gleam in his eyes that promises Jango is going to regret something before the day is up. Of course not, he scoffs. But Jango knows his son. Something prompted this. And something is going to come of it. Jango just wishes he knew what, mostly so he could figure out which way to duck. You see something in town? He asks, pointed. But Boba doesn't even bother to glance up again. In this town? He says, disgusted. Of course not. It's a reasonable statement. The town on this little backwater consists of two rival cantinas on either side of a dusty strip, a ramshackle collection of houses and businesses teetering on their stilts, too many smugglers, and a hell of a lot of smelly swamp grass. Jango hasn't had dry boots since they landed here, and the locals are both unpleasant and heavily armed, to put it mildly. Nothing much seems to happen. In the same way that nothing much seems to happen with a thermal grenade that has the pin halfway pulled out. And Jango's not overly optimistic that he can manage to keep far enough under the radar to maintain the unexploded sort of status quo here. He's got a reputation, after all. That doesn't mean Boba didn't manage to find trouble somewhere. Jango has faith in his son, particularly in his son's ability to give him gray hairs before his time. He never gave Jaster nearly this many problems. He's sure of it. Still, Boba's not talking, and Jango isn't going to be able to make him. So he grudgingly picks up his blaster and cleaning kit again. "Stay out of trouble," he warns darkly. "I can't afford to lose this bounty if I want to show my face anywhere off Kamino. Got it?" "Yeah, yeah," Boba says without looking up. And Jango rolls his eyes so hard they hurt and leaves him to whatever he's plotting. "Hey," a voice says pointedly. "You're a Jedi, right?" John blinks, caught entirely off guard at being addressed, and leans over the side of the branch he's sitting on to look down the trunk of the twisted swamp tree. There's a kid on the end of the rickety pier, staring up at him, and John considers him for a moment. Considers the lightsaber he's dismantling to get the mud out of the inner casing, and says honestly, "Yes." The boy, who can't be more than 10, peers up at him for a moment, nose wrinkling, and then asks, "How'd you even get up there? There aren't any branches, and the ground's all swamp down here." John studies the boy for a moment, weighing his options. But there's no sense of threat, not even a flicker of ulterior motive in the boy's mind. Just curiosity, sharp-edged, and, well, John doesn't tend to interact with a lot of people, but children are always the easiest. "Did you want to come up?" he asks quietly, and the boy blinks, then grins. "Yeah," he says. "Do I need to get my jetpack?" A little amused, John shakes his head, then raises a hand. It's the work of a moment to feel the flow of the force through the tree beneath, and with a touch of will, a trace of intent, he bends it. The limb beside his shifts, curls, dips like a bow, and comes to a stop a meter from the dock. "If you jump, I'll hold you steady," John says, but the boy is already moving. He takes two running steps without so much as a hesitation, clears the gap with a flying leap, and scrambles up as John lets the branch lift, the tree straightening back up to its former position. There's a moment of creaking as it settles, sways, and then the limb's still. The boy sits up straight, looking up at the tree with faintly wide eyes, and then drops his gaze to John.
"Jedi can do that?" he demands.
"Some," John allows, bemused. He eyes the boy as he slides closer, steady on the limb, and then says, "You're not a local."
"The lack of webbed feet gave it away?"
the boy asks sarcastically. John snorts and turns back to his lightsaber, finally finding the catch that opens the interior mechanism. "You don't like mud," he says, and tugs. The casing opens, letting out a trickle of slime, and he grimaces. A moment of concentration sends the whole hilt scattering into pieces. They rise into the air, swirling around him in a cloud of brylark bark and metal. The green crystal is the most grime-covered part of the whole mess, and John sighs a little, plucking it out of the air and fishing a polishing cloth out of his belt pouches. The boy is watching him closely, intrigued. And he slides closer still as John starts cleaning the mud off the kyber crystal.
"How the hell did you get it that dirty?" he asks, wrinkling his nose.
"There are creatures in the swamp that I've been fighting," John says. Faye was the one to alert him to the presence of chrysalids on this planet, and he managed to track them from the ancient Sith laboratory they'd escaped from to here. He's still missing some, though, going by how many growth chambers had cracked in the recent earthquake. Two Vornskers, probably, and at least one Rancor. A Gundark and a Katarn as well, judging by the shape of the cocoons. Maybe a Warworm, too, if he's particularly unlucky. One threw me into his deep spot.
"Oh," the boy frowns, then asks, "That's a kyber crystal, right? Can I see it?"
John tosses it to him without pause. He's the furthest thing from helpless without his lightsaber, and the kid's curiosity is bright, honest. He catches it easily, then holds it up to the light, squinting at it, and John goes back to his disassembled lightsaber, working his way through cleaning the different parts. The silence stretches for a few moments,
and John knows the boy is watching him, can feel the weight of his gaze. Doesn't look up, though, doesn't waver. If the boy wants to leap down and run, that's fine. John will get his crystal back later. Dark Woman made sure he could survive practically anything without his lightsaber, and it won't be the first time John has had to.
I saw you, the boy says finally. When you reappeared in that alley, that was teleporting, right?
John grimaces a little, hidden by his hood. He doesn't like teleporting, but the Katarn he'd been fighting had dragged him deep into the swamp, hurled them both over the edge of the cliff in its death throes. Potentially, he could have caught himself at the bottom, but then he would have had to trek all the way back, exhausted and soggy, and he decided to suffer through the teleportation in the face of that. Some Jedi can do that, too, he confirms, and lets go of the last piece of his lightsaber. Glancing over, he asks, "Done with that?" The boy nods, holding the crystal out, and John lets it rise into the air, swirl back into the mess of pieces. Takes a breath, closes his eyes, and spreads his fingers as he feels for the threads of the Force that the lightsaber wants to follow. He doesn't fight them, but lets them flow, shift, settle, and with a whirl of bright silver metal and golden brown bark, the lightsaber twists itself back together, shutting the green crystal away. There's a moment of silence, and then the boy laughs, leaning forward on his branch.
That's the coolest way to clean a weapon, he says.
John smiles a little, then holds out a hand. The lightsaber drops into his palm, and he clips it to his belt, then reaches up, folding his hood back. Some children flinch away from the scars, but this one doesn't, just looks at him curiously, with an edge of enthusiasm that lightens something in John's chest. I'm John Antilles, he says, and bows to the boy. It's an honor to meet you. The boy rolls his eyes, but he can't completely hide the flicker of pleasure that rises.
I'm Boba, he says, and tips his head, gaze a little too sharp. Knight Antilles?
Master, John allows. Studies Boba again for a moment. It's more instinct than anything tangible that makes him say, You're Mandalorian. Boba twitches back, going tense like he's calculating the best way to leap for the dock. When John very deliberately doesn't move, though, he pauses, eyes narrowing, and demands,
How do you know that?
John looks away, considering it, and shifts to put his back against the trunk. He draws a knee up, letting his other foot dangle off the branch, and says, as he puts the pieces he hadn't consciously registered together, There's a Mandalorian ship in the port. You're not a local, and you know about Jedi. You're familiar with weapons, if you clean them frequently, and you're trained. The way he moves gives that away, at the very least, as does the lack of fear when John mentioned creatures in the swamp.
Oh, Boba says, and relaxes again. He looks thoughtful. You seem kind of dumb, but you're not, are you?
John rolls his eyes, but doesn't protest. Did you want something? He asks, raising a brow.
To see if you'd teleport again?
Boba says shamelessly, and slides down the branch. Obligingly, John makes the tree bend close to the dock, and he leaps off, landing in a crouch on the warped planks. When he straightens again, he's grinning.
The tree thing is cool too, though.
With a snort, John shifts, crossing his legs beneath himself. Be careful in the swamp, is all he says. There are mutated Vornskers.
Boba pauses, then pulls a face. Yuck!
Solemnly, John inclines his head in agreement, then flips his hood up. With a frown, Boba steps back, then says,
You're not that ugly. Why do you always hide your face?
Children, John thinks wryly, are all menaces. The scars scare people off, he says quietly, and pointedly curls his hands together in a ring above his lap, closing his eyes. He couldn't be more obviously meditating if he raised a flashing sign behind himself. And he hears Boba let out an exasperated huff, then stalk away, the boards of the dock squeaking under his feet. One breaks with a crack halfway down, and Boba's foot slips through as he yelps. Obligingly, John catches him with the force, pulling him back up to his feet, and says mildly, "Careful." There's a suspicious pause, and Boba says, "Thanks." John keeps his peace, even if he'll probably never see Boba again. He's content with the idea that one Mandalorian, at least, won't grow up thinking all Jedi are traitorous monsters. Jango doesn't often like to resort to dialogue normally found in bad frontier hollows, meant for core crowds who will never make it past Metalos in their explorations of the galaxy, but sometimes triteness fits. This, it seems, is one of those cases. This town's not very big. It's definitely not big enough for both Jango and a Jedi. One of them's going to have to beat it, and Jango's waiting for a bounty. It's not going to be him. Unfortunately, there isn't exactly going to be a lot of local support in his quest to dump the freak in the swamp and be done with it. All the business owners he talks to are more or less bemused by the Jedi's presence, like he's a Nexu that wandered into their town and started sleeping in the sun and purring a lot. Jango hears a few mentions of things in the swamp, eating locals, and the Jedi bringing back heads, but most of them seem preoccupied by the fact that he looks like a hobo and sleeps in trees and bows to everyone in the town like they're Coruscanti diplomats on assignment. Odd seems to be the assessment. And Jango thinks of the fancy put-together bastard who led the Jedi forces on Galadron and has to grit his teeth. The Jedi Order seems to come in a lot of flavors. At the very least, this one seems to be more wandering monk than poncy shithead. But he'll probably show his true colors soon enough. They always do. As far as the people of the moon are concerned, the Jedi's an interesting conversation piece, especially since he's not here to arrest smugglers or nose in on business. It would be a hell of a lot easier to turn them against him if he was. But Jango chooses to be grateful that his target won't go scurrying for the nearest bolt hole the second he turns up. He's already tracked the wood rat shithead across 6 systems, and he's getting tired of it. Neither of the cantinas in the town are nice, but Jango stakes out the one closest to what passes for a spaceport around here, and it's mildly more pleasant than some he's been in over the years, so there's at least that. The bartender looks like she's seen more than enough bounty hunters come through for her to be sick of them, and the blaster rifle she keeps in plain view on the bar says she knows how to handle herself, so Jango doesn't bother making a fuss, just tucks himself away in the corner to wait for his target and nurse a drink, while Boba pokes around the group of Corellian smugglers who seem to be laying low in the town. It keeps him out of trouble, and he's got a blaster with him, so Jango isn't particularly fussed. Boba's sensible. Most of the time. More or less. Jango closes his eyes and sighs a little, pressing the cool glass to his temple. He definitely never gave Jaster this many problems. Before he can contemplate that further, not that he will, because it's the truth and he's absolutely sure of that, the door creaks open, letting in a whirl of humid air that reeks of the deep swamps. Jango opens his eyes and immediately goes stiff. The Jedi is in the doorway, draped in a green-brown cloak that conceals him almost completely. The hood is pulled up, and he has his hands folded into the sleeves, and looks like a hobo was the most common description Jango got when he was asking around. And he can see why. The robe is patched, and the pants he can see beneath it are patched, and there are worn places that look like they're in need of it. The hem is a little ragged, and instead of fancy cream-colored tunics most Jedi wander around in, this one's wearing dark brown that almost manages to hide the fact that it's looking a little threadbare. Most of the people around here have never seen a Jedi before, and never will after this. The moon's firmly Outer Rim territory, and Jedi don't exactly spend a lot of time in the Rim. As far as their first glimpse of a member of the famed Jedi Order goes, this one's a little underwhelming. Straightening, the bartender blinks, then says, "Master Jedi, here for a drink?" The Jedi, Jango thinks, mostly looks bemused to be in an actual building, as if he's not entirely sure why he's here either. But at the bartender's words, he inclines his head and steps in fully, letting the door swing shut behind him. His robe is mud-splattered on the bottom, and there's something darker mixed in with the paler dirt of the swamp. Blood, maybe, Jango assumes, eyeing it. He carefully shifts, giving himself a clear line to draw and fire his blaster. The Jedi turns his head, and pale eyes are suddenly fixed on Jango. Not hostile, not even wary, but most definitely one predator acknowledging another in a small space. It makes the hair on Jango's neck prickle, and he narrows his eyes, braces himself for the Jedi killer remarks. "None of that now," the bartender says sharply, and reaches for her blaster. "Take it to G's Cantina if you want to fight, but not in my establishment." Unhurried, unconcerned, the Jedi turns away, takes another step in, and bows to her. "Forgive me," he says, low and a little rough. "I can leave." The bartender eyes him, then gives Jango a narrow look. He raises his hands, an attempt at innocence that she clearly doesn't buy, but she seems content that his hands are away from his blaster, and nods. "You're fine, Master Jedi," she says, maybe a little softer than Jango thinks is warranted, like she's calming a spooked horse, maybe. "As long as there's no trouble, you're welcome here. Come have a drink." The Jedi gives Jango his back, which is either a show of gross overconfidence or an indication that Jango's going to have a hell of a fight on his hands if he decides to pick this one. He narrows his eyes at the man's back, but the Jedi doesn't turn, simply accepts the glass the barkeep hands him and passes over a credit chip in return, then takes himself off into a shadowy corner and hunkers down at a table. He doesn't remove his hood and doesn't look around, and he seems entirely content to just sit there and contemplate the eternal mysteries of the rot gut they serve here, or whatever it is Jedi do instead of getting drunk like normal people. Jango weighs his options for a long, long span of minutes, but, well, Jedi don't tend to linger places without a reason, and if the monsters in the swamp are bad enough that the Order deigned to dispatch a Jedi to deal with them, it's something he wants to know about. Rising from his seat, he stalks across the room, aware of the barkeep's wary gaze on him. The Jedi must know he's coming. Jango isn't bothering to be subtle, but he doesn't so much as glance up, even when Jango kicks out the chair across from him and throws himself down into it. "You're a long way from Coruscant," he says, halfway to a challenge. There's a long pause, and then the Jedi finally raises his head. It's hard to see any details of his face beneath the drape of his hood, but Jango can make out a sharp nose that has definitely been broken before, a mouth with a scar that edges over the lower lip. His hands are scarred too, where they're curled around his drink. That makes Jango a hell of a lot more inclined to believe he's dangerous, honestly. "I'm not from Coruscant," the Jedi says after a moment, and lifts his glass, taking his first sip of the drink. Doesn't wince, even though what they serve here could strip paint, but sets it down again and offers, "You're a long way from Mandalore." Jango smiles, and it's not kind. "I'm not from Mandalore." Instead of pressing, though, the Jedi just snorts softly, tips his glass at Jango, and takes another sip. Jango lets the silence stretch as long as he physically can, but eventually it weighs too heavily, and he leans back in his chair, drops his muddy boots on the chair next to the Jedi, and makes it as obnoxious as possible when he crosses them. The Jedi doesn't even glance down, doesn't give any sort of reaction, and Jango wants to narrow his eyes. All the Jedi he's run into are terribly cultured and dignified and graceful, and they react to Jango's rudeness like a puppy chewing on their boots, which makes it especially satisfying to find a spot to snipe them from later. This one seems entirely unbothered, though, and he just takes another sip of his rot gut as Jango waits for a reaction. When it becomes clear there isn't going to be one, Jango lets out an irritated breath, recrosses his boots, and says, "Monsters in the swamp?" There's a pause, and the Jedi glances up, then hesitates, flicks a glance around them, even though there's no one close, and then inclines his head slightly. "There was an ancient Sith laboratory on this moon," he says quietly, "a leftover from their last war with the Republic. When the earthquake hit, some of the chambers cracked and the experiments got loose." Disgust curls in Jango's gut, and he grimaces. The Mandalorian still tells stories about the last Sith Empire and its attempt to overwhelm the Republic, and none of the tales are meant for children. The Mandalorian Crusaders and the Sith under Exar Kun were allies, but with allies like the Sith, having enemies is just overkill. Jango might be working for one now, but that doesn't mean he trusts Tyrannius as far as he can throw him. "How many?" he asks, already calculating how close to keep Boba. Boba's smart and he's skilled for his age, but he's still only 10. If there are things running around this moon that the Sith would have kept as pets, it's better to keep him close and deal with the whining. And if the Jedi won't tell him, Jango will have to drag him into a dark alley later and beat it out of him. 5 creatures left, the Jedi says quietly, grimly. Maybe 6. I'm not sure if the war worm got loose or if it was killed in the collapse. At the very least, there's a hunting pair of mutated Vornskers and a Rancor. I've been tracking the other Katarn, but... Katarns are generally the prey of whole groups of Wookiees. Jango grimaces, touching his blaster, and makes a mental list of what weaponry he has that might be sufficient. It's not nearly as much as he would like. Close to the town? Not yet. Jango snorts at the wry weariness in those two words. More than able to relate. He considers for a moment, almost thinks about offering his help, because a hunt like that is sure to be a challenge, but... Jedi. He's a Jedi, and Jango's the Jedi killer, and it's none of his business. Noted, he says, and pushes to his feet. The Jedi watches him go, gaze steady, and it prickles at Jango's skin, but he doesn't let himself turn around and look as he shoves out the door, intending to find Boba and warn him to stay close. The Jedi can live for another day. If Jango's lucky, he and the things he's hunting will take each other out, and it will be better for all involved. Well, better for Jango. But Boba and himself are the only things he cares about, so it's more or less the same thing anyway.
"Are you trying to get your father to kill me?"
Boba almost startles out of his own skin, wrenching around to find the street empty behind him. He stares for a moment, then jerks his head up and... John. John perched in another tree above the meandering raised street, looking a little like an overgrown bird as he crouches there. "Criff," Boba mutters, giving him a dark look. "Are you trying to kill me with a heart attack?" He can't see much of John's face with his hood up, but his mouth curves just faintly, almost a smile.
"I think you'll survive," he says,
and drops, landing in front of Boba without so much as a sound. Given the boots he's wearing, it's a little impressive. And Boba eyes him, wondering if it's a force skill or the kind of thing he could learn. "Maybe," he allows grudgingly, "but it's still rude."
"Rude is also sending me into the cantina where your father was waiting," John says mildly,
and Boba very carefully keeps his expression perfectly innocent. "He was?" he says. "Sorry, I thought it was the other one he liked."
John snorts quietly,
and Boba is a little pleased that he's not fooled. If John's going to keep up with Jango, he needs to stay on his toes, after all.
Whatever you're aiming for, he says. Leave me out of it. Bubba rolls his eyes.
All you do is wander around the swamp all day, he points out. It's not like it's inconvenient for you.
Having Jango Fett out for my head would be very inconvenient. I like sleeping, and I'd never be able to do it again.
That's not Jango Fett killing me would be inconvenient, which means John's confident he would survive. That's a good thing. Bubba grins at him and says, my dad's not that bad. He's just grumpy.
He killed 4 Jedi with his bare hands.
They'd killed his best friend.
Bubba weighs what to say for a moment and finally settles on.
That was before he was a bounty hunter.
Back when he was Mandalore. John finishes quietly, and Bubba nods.
His dad would probably yell at him for giving a Jedi information, but this is a cool Jedi. He doesn't have a problem with Jango, and he can teleport. And Bubba is absolutely convinced that his dad could use someone cool and strong and reliable, given that he's making deals with Sith. Those deals are the reason Bubba exists, granted, but it's still dangerous. And besides, Bubba has several million little brothers who are going to be in the line of fire if his dad doesn't figure things out. And a Jedi will help with that. Jango has mostly been pretending the clones aren't his. But by Mandalorian law, they're absolutely his sons. Bubba is going to make him see that eventually. And throwing someone who's his type and won't take his Bantha shit into the mix is a good way to get him to listen.
After a long moment, John inclines his head. If he tries to kill me, I'll fight back, he says, a gentle warning. And Bubba shrugs.
You're a Jedi, not a settler or something, he says. I know, but you can teleport, so I figure you've got a better chance of getting away than most Jedi.
John's mouth curls again, and this time there's very little humor in it. Just something wry and rueful. Bubba, if your father attacks me, I won't need to get away. He will. Before Bubba can answer, John turns on his heel and leaps up, landing in the tree again. Quickly, Bubba takes a step after him and says, wait! He doesn't think it's going to work, honestly, but John pauses, even if he doesn't turn around. Bubba knows he's listening.
The scanners on our ship can probably pick up the things you're hunting, if they're close enough, he says quickly. I can recalibrate them. Tomorrow morning?
There's a pause. And then John asks, sounding faintly amused, and what do you want in return?
Bubba grins. He's quick. Dinner, he says. For me and my dad.
John considers it for a moment, then inclines his head, gravely. Acceptable,
he says, and throws himself up and forward in a long, twisting leap that defies gravity and physics both. Then hits a rooftop and redirects, dropping down among the trees beyond the first line of buildings and vanishing from sight. With John safely out of sight, Bubba makes a sound of victory, punching the air. Jango's gonna be on the Slave One all day tomorrow doing some repairs, so no matter what time John shows up, they'll run into each other. And then, when John gets food for the old dinner, or better yet, takes them out to eat, Bubba will make himself scarce. Behind a stack of crates, something rustles. Instantly, Bubba turns, eyes narrowing. He's got a vibroblade with him, but nothing big. And if it's a serious threat, he might need to calm Jango, which isn't precisely disappointing, but it's always better when Bubba can handle things himself. Carefully, quietly, Bubba edges around the crates, slipping into the shadows and staying low as he makes his way around the far side from the noise. It comes again. Like a scuff, like someone is trying to be quiet. And maybe it's just someone who is interested in John's presence, but Bubba catches sight of a head of shaggy brown hair and lunges, throwing his full weight at the spy. Instantly, there's a loud, indignant yelp, a crash, and they tumble over a stack of boards, spill into the street, and land hard. Squirming, limbs bat at Bubba, but he shoves the spy down, pins his legs the way Jango taught him, and raises his head. Disappointment flares, and Bubba scoffs loudly. You're just a kid, he says disgustedly. So are you,
the other boy hisses, still wriggling.
He punches at Boba, but Boba just rolls his eyes and catches his fist, unimpressed. He doesn't get up, because this kid is one he's definitely seen hanging around the Corellian ships in the port, and that makes Boba frown suspiciously. "What do Corellian smugglers want with me and my dad?" he demands. "Why are you spying on me?" Insultingly, the kid rolls his eyes. "I don't care about you," he retorts. "I was trying to see the Jedi, you bantha brain." Boba can't help the sound of sheer offense that's pulled from him. "I don't believe you." "I don't care. It's true. I'm a Fett. Of course those smuggler bastards you're with want to know about us." That makes the kid flush, and he gives Boba a defiant look. "They don't even know I snuck out," he says. "I'm not spying. I just wanted to see if they're... was really a Jedi here. I thought they weren't real, but you're trying to get one killed." "I'm trying to get him to go on a date," Boba says, annoyed. "With my dad. I don't want him killed. He's weird, but he's cool." "Oh," the kid settles down, though he's still giving Boba a suspicious look. "Promise?" "Swear," Boba says firmly. "My word as a Mandalorian." "Then let me up already," the kid tells him. And Boba rolls his eyes but does, rising to his feet and pointedly brushing off his pants. The other boy gets up too, and he eyes Boba for a moment, then says, "I'm Han." A little surprised, Boba glances up at him, but he's still hovering, clearly wants something, so Boba just says, "I'm Boba Fett." "Nice to meet you," Han says a little grudgingly. And then, "Can I meet the Jedi?" Boba opens his mouth to refuse, but... "Well, it's the perfect opportunity to get some cheap help, isn't it? Jango always says that subcontracting is a valid way of making a few credits, and the same probably applies here." "Sure," Boba says and smirks at him. "And in return, you get to help me." Han looks less than enthused by this offer, but that's fine. He'll come around eventually. Boba is sure. And besides, it's for a good cause. If he can make Jango think he's not the mastermind behind all of this, the good cause of Boba not getting grounded for eternity and all that. "Deal," Han says reluctantly, and holds out a hand. Boba grins and takes it. Everything's coming together, and it's looking like this plan is going to work excellently. He can't wait.